Hi everybody, welcome to season 4, episode 2 of the Hard Truth Inside the Football Injury Podcast with me, Philip Ideson, and Darren McAnthony, chairman and co-owner of Peterborough United. And we're recording this on a Friday, which is a little bit unusual for us. And we're going to try and get it out today as well.
Everyone's got to turn it out today. So yeah, so again, it's not us. You know, people always say, oh, you don't record if you lose, or you don't record if you don't win, and we never decide not to record because Bradford lose or Peterborough lose or whatever. You know, we've had an all right week football club wise. So of course we'd like to record, but you've obviously had travel nightmares. BA are on your enemy number one list. So, you know, give everyone a quick 1 minute so that they can fucking help complain to BA for you.
Yeah, well, you can blame to BA for the pod not coming out on Wednesday. They basically left us stranded in Gatwick for what they wanted to be almost a week, for cancelling our flight on Monday and just giving no help generally. You know, that was the worst of it. No empathy, no help, no support. Right. We figured out a way through another airline to get home on Wednesday, because if not, we'd actually still be sitting in Gatwick probably right now. So all best laid plans. We were going to record on Wednesday, but we wanted to at least get something out this week. We didn't want to start the season with one and then go disappear again for a week.
Yeah, well, obviously, look, you know, it's we won't keep people too long today, but obviously we've got some stuff to cover this week. So let's start with Bradford. So yeah, because you went to the game with your boys, I saw the pictures and whatever else. Yeah. Crawley, give me the rundown. How did the first day of the season look? I know it didn't finish well, but give me the quick spiel on it. How was it?
Yeah, it wasn't good. Well, we started okay. I think we were victim of absolutely appalling refereeing. It'll be interesting to see if it was just, you know, a referee having a really bad day, or him just being to the letter of the law of all these new rules and regulations and things like that. You know, I think we had 11 or 13 bookings, something like that, over the game. There were 5 or 6 in the first half an hour. And it made, you know, every time anyone got touched, they went down and the yellow card came out and just ruined the game. And, you know,
we had 16 in ours and both managers got carded. And again, it wasn't a game where I remember a bad tackle.
Yeah.
And the danger is that people who haven't done anything wrong, bar maybe stupidly kick a ball or stupid whatever, are going to end up getting sent off. So I don't mind the extra time, but I think they need to. I'm hoping anyway that they kind of bring it down a bit.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit of the injury time, because, you know, players are going to have physical problems. Mm-hmm. And also a little bit on the yellow cards. I think that will have to. I don't know about the referee's performance. Ours was okay. But, you know, they're going to have to really get their eyes on it and go, right, we started here. We got to relax it a bit.
Yeah, I think our ref compounded it by, you know, blowing for fouls that weren't fouls and then booking them as well. And so that led to us being down to 10 men after about 40 minutes. You know, but you can then say, you know, as someone who's on the yellow card, whether it should or not have been a yellow card, needs to be careful. Exactly. You know, so a brainless, you know, when you start going into challenges when you're on a yellow, and that led to the red. Having said all that, we didn't play very well. Their goal was direct from free kick. It was really badly defended free kick. You know, we didn't set the wall up really very well at all. I think because we were still complaining to the ref about it being a free kick and a yellow card. Left a huge gap for him to basically just put the ball into the back of the net. And
How many of your 11 were played in the final playoff game last year? Like, give me an idea of changes in the 11.
That's a really good question. Off the top of my head, I would say 7 or 8 of the team.
Okay.
You know, we've been over the summer, it's been about, you know, specific recruiting for specific needs to fill holes, rather than the summer before it was, we just need bodies in the building.
Yeah.
So there's not been that much churn. The churn for us has been in formation and playing style. And at the moment, you know, it looks like the back three that we were playing had never seen each other before. So that was a bit worrying.
Are you playing the same formation?
No, we went wing backs.
Last season it was a 4-2-3-1. Wing backs, three at the back.
Yeah, try and get a little bit more up front, a bit more creativity, you know, one more in the hole. Right. But the... you know, the back three are pretty slow. And I think that at least for our left back, it's a little bit of a square peg in a round hole for him being a wing back. So, you know, things to work on. A couple of weeks left, still in the window. We'll see what that brings. But it wasn't a great start.
Okay. But, you know, again, it's first game of the season. Yeah. I mean, did Crawley look any good?
No, not really. I think it was two teams who didn't play very well that they had the one-man advantage, and that was what was the difference. You know, exactly. even when it was 10-11, it still really looked like it was 11-11. Okay. But we never really created much.
So you've got business to do still in the next 2.5 weeks?
I think so. I'm not sure how much business we will do. We need to get bodies out, really, before we can bring too much in. I think...
Yeah.
You know, go ahead.
I was just going to say, is that dependent on selling the goalie or bringing in money? Because I know the goalie, obviously, yeah. You know, potentially was nearly going to go, or I think it was Barnsley was named.
Yeah, Barnsley. I think it's, you know, there's a lot of squad players that are just hanging around that aren't going to get much game time. So it's getting a few of those out.
You're not going to sell the goalie?
I mean, you never say never in football, do you? Somebody might come in with a really good offer on transfer deadline day, and you can't say no to that. But I don't think there's any plans to sell him at the moment.
Did he kick up a stink?
He's been talking about the fact that, you know, he was unsettled during the time when it was discussed whether he was going to go or not. Really just because he didn't like that kind of limbo of, will I go, will I stay? He seems to have put his head down, you know, since he said that since we turned the bids down and got on with things, certainly said the right things, made the right noises in public. So it seems like it's, you know, business as usual for him.
Okay. And then you played, who did you beat in the League Cup?
Yeah, we beat Accrington on penalties. Okay. So because of all our travel travails, I didn't get to see it. But I heard it was somewhat of an improvement that Accrington played a pretty understrength team. But, you know, the players are getting more familiarity with the formation.
Okay. Was that at Accrington or at Bradford?
Yeah, at Accrington.
So two big away trips really to start the season.
Yeah, and Accrington's, you know, always a hard place for us to go as well. One of those places that we'd never do too well at. So, you know, and there were 2,300 there, and I think about 1,500 of them were City fans.
Who have you got tomorrow?
Colchester at home.
They're decent. We played them pre-season. Mm-hmm. They're decent. They're very good. You know, a lot of good young players. They're good.
So who should we look out for?
Well, they've got Joe Taylor on loan. Yep. Striker himself to Luton. He scored the other night. I think they're playing him with the target man, Tabe, who got sent off the other night.
Yeah, the flying kick.
Yeah. On that. They've got, obviously, Chilvers is a danger man. They've got a wide right that's tasty. I don't know if their right back's playing, because I think is it Stoker who's trying to buy him, so it's been on and off.
Chamadou.
Yeah, great player, but obviously he's going to the Championship. They play a good style of football. When we played them in pre-season, obviously they're very young, but they're dangerous. They're not being talked about in any kind of promotion way, but I would imagine they're going to win a lot of games they're not expected to win. You know, so they have a good setup there. So, yeah, that'd be a tough game.
Yeah, and I hope they do well, you know, tomorrow apart, of course, because they were struggling last year, weren't they, for a long time? And, you know, we've talked about the setup and the focus on youth. And, Robbie, you want teams like that to do well.
Yeah, Robbie runs a good ship there. Do you know what I mean? It was decent, you know, good pitch, good training facilities. You always want teams like that to prosper in the Football League, your Exeters, your Crews, them. You know, it's kind of like, it's what makes the EFL brilliant. You know, seeing those clubs do it the right way. Wimbledon's another one, you know, and you want teams like that not to suffer, you know, because the big boys spending too much money. You want I guess it's the romantic in me. You want to do well. Yeah. So,
you want that behavior rewarded, don't you? Because you want more clubs to take that direction.
Correct. And we're doing that, you know, so you do want that, you know what I mean? So, okay, interesting for Bradford anyway.
Yeah, so we'll see what tomorrow brings. How about you? So you had opening day win at Reading to start with.
Yeah, it was really good. Reading always look after you. I love the director's box there. Great pitch. You know, Reading, it's not an easy place for people to go to. They signed a lot of players. Their first 11 was very strong. It was still a lot of championship players. So even though they have all these problems about signing players and registering them, it was a strong 11. We named, I think, the youngest team in our history first 11. I think the average age was 22.7. Mm-hmm. think it was one of the youngest teams named in League One. That went under the radar with everyone at the weekend talking about Barnsley's win and all the other things, you know. But I think it was there wasn't a lot of attention given to the fact that our young team went to Reading, you know, won and held a clean sheet for 105 minutes or whatever it was with the injury time. So it was good. Some of our play was fantastic. Like, you know, fantastic. It made me laugh. One of the local reporters, not Swanee, I think it was his young assistant, you know, put out at halftime that, you know, Reading dominated possession. But I get all the data because the way we're trying to play now is possession-based. And I think we had 66% of the possession in the first half, they had 34. So we controlled the game where it mattered. And the best chances probably in the game fell to us. Their best chance, Roman Critch, basically made an unbelievable, like, goal-saving tackle. You know, it was Andy Carroll 5 yards out from goalie. But what I'm seeing is bodies on the line. We didn't see a lot of that last year. Mm-hmm. Bodies on the line defending, which I love to see. Our goalie was very good. Archie Collins, fucking ridiculous. Do you know what I mean? So there was just a lot of good things in the game. Our skipper scored a good goal. And yeah, it was a good win. It's just a platform. I wasn't getting overly excited because, like I said to you, you know, those early games in the season, it's you, like we said about Bradford, you're finding your way, you're finding your pattern of play. You know, we didn't start well the first 10 minutes, but I said to Barry, I said, Baz, remember, we've got to be patient. They're a young group. There's going to be, they're not going to start games well. They're probably nervous. They're at Reading. There's a decent crowd for Reading. They're playing Andy Carroll. They're playing, you know, experienced players on big money. You know, let them find their feet. And they found their feet. So it was really, really good. Good to get out of there with a win because Reading will be up there. And then we played on Tuesday, we played Swindon. Mm-hmm. And Swindon hadn't played on Saturday, as you know, the game was called off. So, and Swindon were good, like really good. Good style of football, really good. You know, we pretty much named the same sidebar, a couple of changes. We probably had the best chances in the first half. Joel Randall was excellent, good goal. He was excellent against Reading, to be fair. And we didn't take our chances. And I think 5 minutes into the second half, Ricky was put up front. He beat five men. He ran 50 yards. You know, he gets a lot of criticism, that boy, but boy, he's a threat. And then he's in on goal. And the final bit is, you know, 20-year-old. You want us, eventually he comes. You want a bit of arrogance. Yeah. Again, you know, dink the goalkeeper. But that's someone who's 23, 24, has played 100 games, dinks the goalie. A 20-year-old who's done all the hard work. It's the last thing, you know, instead the goalie saves. So at that point, 2-0, the game's over. We win that game comfortably. Swindon came into it. We looked a bit lethargic. You could tell the retired legs. Swindon came into the game, pretty much controlled from the 50th minute to the 80th minute. They pretty much dominated us. Played some good football. Scored an equaliser. Probably their only real great chance of the game. And then I think he brought Jono on the last 10 minutes. He was kind of resting him because Jono had done a lot of yards against Reading. And we were the better side the last 10 minutes. Then it went in. The final kick of the game, Randall put it on a plate for Clark Harris. And you're waiting for the net to buzz, but, you know, it wasn't quite. But then we went to penalties, and then we scored some fantastic penalties. We've now got a goalkeeper who can save penalties. So I think we have these 4-1. That was funny, you know, because obviously a couple of fans pulled me. Like, oh, that's not grand. Like, it's a League Cup game. I couldn't give a fuck. If I'm being really honest, there's no money in the League Cup unless you get to the later rounds and get a TV game or you're Wrexham and you're on TV every week or whatever, or get one of the big boys. It didn't really matter. What it was, there's another chance to get 90 minutes in legs because still you go into a new start of the season, people aren't, you're probably only 70% fit.
Yeah.
But what we did was we got lost in the game probably, and I'm not being critical of the players. You know, they just weren't at it at certain periods. But what I liked was the will not to lose when not playing well. And I have to say, Critch was probably our best defender. Like, Ronnie's fucking Ronnie, do you know what I mean? But like, from a tackles, fucking nicking balls, nicking whatever, you know.
There's, he reads the game really well, doesn't he?
Yeah, there's a player in there. There's lots he has to improve. He's 24. Yeah. It's his first permanent club for a long time, you know. But boy, there's a player in there. And probably what was deemed one of his weaknesses in the air, you can see he's getting better. He's timing headers. He's getting up. It's a good group. And that team on Tuesday was even younger than the one on Saturday that we played. Because we replaced a 29-year-old striker with a 25-year-old striker. And we had then Efron was out, was 23, and Ricky came in at 20. So I dare say, younger team, but some great performances off the bench. Yeah, you know, the games, we knew our fix. You know, we got Charlton tomorrow. We got a big derby against Northampton. We got Derby. We've got Portsmouth back-to-back away. You know, this is League One. It's relentless. But the one thing I said to the manager, I was watching the new Burnley, have got their own documentary out called Mission Burnley. And because of the stupid strikes in America, all our TV fucking shows are on hiatus. I watch the Jake Paul documentary. I watch the Johnny Manziel one. I've watched fucking Mark Cavendish. I'm not even into cycling. I'm bitten up sports, you know, Hard Knocks is back. And obviously I watched yesterday the Mission to Burnley. There's four episodes. And what was really interesting, I don't know if you realize this, Burnley obviously walked away winning the league, didn't they? But by October, they'd drawn like 7 of the first 10 games. I didn't know that.
No, I didn't realize that.
It was like fucking hell. And I'm watching it and watching it and watching. Obviously, he was imposing the style of play with a different team. And they were conceding goals late. They were drawing a lot of games they should have won. And you think back and go, fuck me, all I remember was Burnley dominated in that league by a fucking canter. But actually, if you listen to the behind-the-scenes footage, their boardroom was nervous. Everyone was nervous. They were, you know, mid-table. They weren't great in October. And again, it just goes to show a couple of things. One, company never went away from what they wanted to do. They had to play that way, no matter the results. Now, fans are probably moaning. Directors are probably moaning. But it was like, you're buying in. You're going to do it this way. And it will turn. And it turned. And when it fucking turned, it went bang. And, you know, speaking to the gaffer this morning, it was again, you know, there's going to be times where we're not wonderful. We're not great. Young players throw in stinkers at times. And that's just the nature of the beast. Because if they didn't, they'd be in the Premier League. So, there's going to be times where they look like fucking Brazil. And there's going to be times they look like fucking rag arse Rovers. And that's just, it's a style of play that's new. It's a new squad as regards to the atmosphere with a lot of older players now going and younger players. Harrison Burroughs is vice captain. Efron's captain. You know, Harrison captained the team on Tuesday because Efron's out, you know, was out for a couple of games. And, you know, again, he's a 20-year-old, been with us since he was 12, and he's captain. But there's some good characters in there. So, you know, it's really, really interesting, you know, so to watch it evolve. I'm fully bought in. I'm fully fans. When are we signing players? When are we doing this? When are we doing that? I'm like, you want me to clear up all the other stuff? This is what we're doing. We're resolute in it. My manager's completely on board. All his staff are completely on board. Some of the fans, they've been great. They have to get on board. It's just, you know, we're not signing 19 new players, you know? If a player goes, a player comes in. We've done the core bit of business. You know, if a Ronnie gets sold for fucking whatever, another player will come in. And if a Johnson Clark Harris gets sold, hopefully enough time, another player will come in. But that's where we are. That's what we're going to do. That's not because we have no money and we're in whatever. We've just decided we overspent. You know, debts have got carried away as regards to they need to be cleaned up. And I want to run the club in a different way. And everyone has to sign on. We just have to be responsible. But do it while still having really good young players. And Archie Collins will be the signing of the season in League One.
All right. We'll talk about that at the end of the season.
Yeah, and Joel Randall, by the way, is finally looking like that player I paid all that money for.
Well, it's funny. So I want to mention, just you talked about the first day of the season. You were talking me off the ledge on Saturday night after the Crawley game, saying it's only the first game of the season and, you know, kind of give it time. But Joel Randall, we had a question from Harry Fitzjohn saying, just how good is Joel Randall? He's looked super sharp preseason as a good start. How do you expect him to be this year? He looks like he's finally one to watch.
I think he's loving the fact that, and massive credit to our fans. Forget about we've gotten back in the team and his best pals in the team come from Exeter. Yeah. The fans at Peterborough, who sometimes you can go, they can get down on young players. The fans have been fucking incredible. The noise for him on Tuesday when he scored. The stuff on social media about JR, his mullet, his haircut, the player, he's coming. The fans have decided to get behind him as regards to, oh, well, we've spunked £1 million or whatever. You know, we all forget his age. We forget the things he's gone through the last 2 years. I think the manager's guy and the staff have said to him, you're playing. You're fucking playing. Go and do your thing. We know how good you are. And he's in front of the midfield of Hector and Archie. And they've got a nice little relationship. I think you're just going to see him get better and better and better. And we just have to get behind him because there is a fucking player in there. You've seen him. Everyone saw him in League Two when he was 20, 21. You know, some of the things he's doing, you can see he's a level above. You know, the retention of the ball, the passes, the vision, the this, the that. Even the other night, late in the game, two little passes from him had created two goals. People probably missed that point. But even when he's tired. And the one thing he's doing, and I chatted with him during preseason and said to him, I said, you know, Sammy Schmodix, who's a fan favorite of ours, is he a better player than you? If you took you as a 10 per se or playing behind a front player, is Sammy Schmodix a better player technically than you? And he was like, probably not now. I said, no, he's not. I said, but what Sammy Schmodix does, good or bad, if he's playing brilliant, if he's playing crap, guess what he does? He runs. He runs, he runs, he runs. And fans love that about Sammy. Sammy could be having a stinker, but he will fucking run his heart out. And he will never...
die for the cause.
He will never let you down. Yeah. Even if you were 3-0 down, 5-0 down, 1-0 down, Sammy just keeps running. Sammy can miss 5 one-on-ones. He will still keep running. And that's a testament to him. And that's why his career is going and doing well at Blackburn. And maybe he'll go again. And I said to Joel, you've got all the tangibles technically. I was in a preseason camp. I was getting amongst some of the young players. You know, I've trained a lot of people. I'm not talking about coaching. I'm talking about mind stuff. And where's your mind? What's going on? Where are you at? And I just said to him, you've got all the talent and ability in the world. Back it up with hard work. And you're going to hear the words, run, Joel, run. And I said, if you're having a stinker, but you run your fucking arse off, our fans will fucking get behind you. Because I know what our fans are like. They love hard work. They love endeavor, honesty. And what they don't love is a player who just looks forlorn and is like, you know, that hasn't come off. And they stop.
Yeah, you're kind of giving up. It looks, you might not be, but it looks like you are. And that's perception.
Right, exactly. And what I would say to him is, I would say, thank you. He has run his bollocks off and he's continuing to. And I think the penny's dropped. Thank you. And I think the penny's dropped in a big way. And if he continues doing that, the fans will embrace him. The goals will come. The assists will come. So we're very excited about him. Do you know what I mean? By the way, what a lovely fucking young man. A lovely young man. Do you know what I mean? So we've got some great young men, you know what I mean, in the team. So they're growing up in front of us. It's going to be good. There's going to be bad. There's going to be indifferent. I'm going to say ugly. But I'm all for it. You're not going to hear me in the podcast fucking moan about any players, win, lose, draw, whatever this season.
Do you get any pride from the fact that you have that low average age, you know, that you put together a team that can compete at that age, at this level?
Yeah, I love it. The club's bubbling, you know. The coaching staff are excited by it. They're invigorated by it, you know. And it's not a dig at older players or experienced players. We just felt with this group, they need to be brothers and sisters and just together. And it's difficult having a 29-year-old close with a 20-year-old. Just this. It's just an age gap thing. It's you know, mentally, 29-year-olds are from kids getting married. 20-year-olds are like fucking starting out, you know. So we just feel like what we have. And then you go to the 21s. Our 21s are fucking flying. Like the job Simpson and Jamal are doing with the 21s. You know, we've got Benji Art has played for England under 18. Harney Mills is about to be called up by them. We've got James Dunnell. I call him JD because I can never get his second name right. You know, they've gone to Aston Villa and Forest in the last 2 weeks, gone 2-2 in both games, been leading with minutes to go in both games, playing with a 16-year-old goalie in goal. And basically, like, battered two very good 20. Well, for example, Forest had Jonjo Shelvey playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Villa had some big dogs out as well, you know, in the teams. And our young guns, you know, we've got a number 10 called Donny we signed. We've got David Cowell. We've got some. And then the one that's really exciting me is Gabe Overton's come from our academy. He's been with us since he was like 9 or 10. Terrible injury problems. He was out for like 11 months, growing pains, hamstrings. He's rapid, quick. I think he's got 7 goals in 8 games preseason. And he's growing up and he looks like, you know, he's now looking like a threat in behind as regards to a great finisher. We're just very excited about what's coming through. The academy, the 21s, now into the, and they're impacting the first team. And that's what you want. So when I hear players or, you know, fans go, we haven't got left backs, we haven't got right backs. I'm like, hang on a second. You know, behind your first team, we've got unbelievable players who the manager will play tomorrow. So what am I going to do? Keep going out and bringing outsiders in and stopping the progression of some of these players who are good enough to play for England at a youth level, good enough that we're turning bids down from big academies who will bid you 500,000, 600,000, 700,000, 800,000 for players who've never played for your first team.
Yeah.
But they're not good enough to go on our side at Peterborough in League One. And that's where I'm trying to convince and get across to our fans that Kamata impatience of just let us do this. I know everyone wants a signing. I know everyone wants, well, you know, we need cover here, we need cover there. But no, just let it go, you know. And so, yeah, I just feel invigorated by it. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying watching our coaches enjoy what they're doing. I know there's loads of work to do around the club. I know there's loads of work to do off the pitch. I'm trying to do all of that. But I really am enjoying win, lose, or draw what I'm seeing day to day, not just on a Tuesday or a Saturday. And I haven't had that for a while. So, yeah.
Isn't it interesting you talk about some of the players that, you know, in the youth setup, people haven't heard of them, which is why they don't know of them, or you know, they want a name that they've heard of in the team as opposed to somebody that they don't know. But the fact that, you know, you turn down these bids of, you know, 500, 600, 700, 800, whatever the amount is, and I know that we have the same in our academy and we let some of them go as well, you know, for six figures. And then you have established first team players who you'd never get that kind of money for.
Correct.
It's correct. Just very interesting how the money is in the for transfer fees, the money is in the youth players, not in the first team players sometimes.
It is. And it kind of blows your mind, but I get it. Yeah. Because some of the big clubs, your Villas, your Forests, Brentford even now, are going down the academy route. They have separate budgets to go out and acquire. You know, like you saw Tottenham buy an 18-year-old from Blackburn for a couple of million quid. Mm-hmm. What they do is they now give their academies big budgets. So if Peterborough was in the Premier League, let's say we pull the Luton, we would have a Cat 1 Academy. We'd go all the way up to the top category. And what I do every year is your Cat 1 is like a 5 million budget, 5 to 6 million budget. I would add to that from the first team budget with Premier League millions. And I'd say, look, we're going to allocate an extra 2 million. And that 2 million is fees for you to go out and find the best 17-year-old academies in League 1 and League 2. Go and get me, you know, the best young goalie, the best young centre-back at 17. We will spunk, you know, and punt 2 million a year. Because if we go and spend 2 million on three or four of them, one of them is going to come off. And if they come off for us in the Premier League, they're going to be worth fucking millions.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of the academies in the Premier League do that. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, it's just the way it works in our industry.
You know, it's like what Brighton have taken to the next level with overseas youngsters, isn't it? And the model, as you're now seeing, they're all kind of selling them now into the bigger Premier League teams, but they're, you know, putting down these millions on young kids that they've identified all around the world.
Yes, Brighton basically do that, you know, internationally, hence picking up Casado at 4.5 million, you know, some of the deals. And you admire clubs like Brighton, your Brentfords. You know, I think Aston Villa have got a very good academy. Newcastle are going to start doing it, you know. I want to see Liverpool, you know, do more shopping down the leagues, you know, because I'm a Liverpool fan. When I see bids for some of my talents, always a part of me goes, I fucking wish my... And Barry always pipes in and goes, fuck Liverpool. I've fucking been a United fan all my life. I played for fucking United. Why the fuck aren't they fucking doing the same? You know, so they're always... And that's not us trying to get more money. It's just you want some of your better talent going to Liverpool, because I know how good they can be. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's always the irony. But yeah, it's like the way it's going. I mean, some of the fees, some of the money, some of the deals I'm seeing at the moment, my God almighty, some big boys going, eh?
I know. So we were talking just before we came online about, I forget the pronunciation of his surname, but that was going to Liverpool from Brighton.
I'm fucking, just before I came on, I've seen that he's told Liverpool and everyone that he wants to go to Chelsea. I'm fucking gutted. I am gutted and I'm not gutted. Because Liverpool still need a couple of centre midfielders, and I think they need a centre half. And I'm not sure. Listen, fair play to Fenway for bidding 110 million. Mm-hmm. Idiots out there saying, why didn't they sign Bellingham? I saw some journalists doing it. Well, it wasn't about the money for Bellingham, you fucking idiots. Bellingham only wanted to go to Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Liverpool could afford to do, even though I'd said before, I never thought they'd be able to pay the money for Bellingham. It wasn't about the money. It was about, he just said, a bit like Casado, if a player doesn't want to come to you, it doesn't matter if you offer £1 billion. We've seen that with Mbappe and fucking Saudi. So I'd like Liverpool, if they don't get Casado, go get the Lavia deal done at Southampton quickly. Yeah. And then go get someone else and then spunk some money at centre half. So, you know, but I like the fact they've shown their ambition. They've backed Klopp. They needed to do it. I'm worried that we still don't have that number six going into Sunday. I'm not sure Abby is ready to play as a six to win the league, but I'm okay giving them 2 years to get there. I said it before. I think Liverpool in 24 months are going to be the team to beat. Because by then, Pep hopefully is looking to go home. Man City are going to go through a transition and look for a new manager. And I think Liverpool could shine for two or three seasons and win a couple of league titles.
Yeah, it was for a Liverpool fan, I think it's interesting just seeing that they put the bid in. So the money's there. And that's what, you know, your concern has been, certainly over the last season, is are they going to spend the cash?
I dare say they've rang Brighton, and it's gone along the lines of this, because Brighton have been fucked off by the whole thing. And they've rang Brighton and gone, you obviously have a player who wants to go to Chelsea. We can give you 100, 110 million, but you ain't getting it today or tomorrow, but we'll sign them on a 6-year deal and we'll pay you 18 million a year for 6 years.
Yeah.
I would imagine that's how it's gone. Under those terms, Liverpool could sign any 100 million pound player.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I would imagine that's what's happened. I would imagine the Lavio at Southampton isn't about 48 or 50 million. It's about how much money is up front at Southampton month. So usually you see all these foreign deals all the time. 20 million, 30 million for players we've never fucking heard of. The reason a lot of clubs spunk that is because they're paying it over the 6 years. Mm-hmm. So for one of the biggest clubs in the world like Liverpool to allocate 18 million a year in a transfer fee towards a 21-year-old who's going to be the number six for the next 7-8 years is no big deal. Fenway could do that in a heartbeat.
Do you think inflation is having an effect as well? Because when you start thinking about amortization and the value of money, you know, the value of money in 6 years, obviously very different than the value of the money today. So it looks like a big number today. But if you're paying it over 3 or 4 or 5 years, that actual final payment of, let's say, 20 million is now 10 million or 15 million with the way inflation is going. Do you think that's playing into it?
I think the currency as well, euro, the dollar, I think a lot of things are playing in. I think a lot of Americans are, you know, I just think a lot of things are happening because of what's happening in world economies. But I'm not sure at the end of the day, you know, I just think a lot of these European deals are done over time. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, the Brighton thing, Brighton don't need 100 million today. And I think Brighton would be quite happy. If I'm Brighton and they've got all this money and they got Bloom who's like fucking mega, he's like, I'm going to stick it up Chelsea in a way where I'm asking for 100 million off Chelsea. He probably wants it like up front the next year.
Yeah.
Again, this is just me speculating.
Yeah.
And he's basically gone, what difference does it make getting 110 million over 5 years, a year or 2 years? Brighton are fucking loaded. They've got plenty of money in the bank. They're financial fair play savvy. They've got fucking assets all over the team. They're probably one of the best run 3-4 football clubs in the world at this moment. Them and Brentford are up there.
Mm-hmm. Does that give hope that, you know, how much of that is down to, you know, an owner with money, with, you know, the money that it's needed to get to that level versus a very well-run football club? Because I'm thinking, does that give hope still to the rest of the pyramid?
Yeah. Yes.
That you run your football club in a smart way that anyone can replicate them?
I think it comes down to a few things. Having a great owner is one thing with deep pockets. That can get you so far. I think having a great owner who knows that to hire good people is even better. Mm-hmm. And I think Brentford, I think Brighton, clubs like that are very, very good at upper tier management level. And it's something I need to catch up with and what we're doing at my club. We're making a lot of changes. We've got an executive team. All those things are happening. And I think investing more in your staff, and I spoke about this before, pays off down the road. You know, Luton have shown it. You know, Brighton are doing it consistently. Brentford have shown it. You know, I just think they're well-run football clubs. And there's no, they want a player, they get a player. You know, you could argue some of the bigger run football clubs is a scattergun approach and too many chiefs, not enough, too many chiefs, not enough, too many Indians, not enough chiefs. A lot of that going on. And I just think the Brightons and the Brentfords are a great template of how to, from an academy, from a transfer policy, from a style of football, from a fans policy, they're very together. So there's a lot to admire about clubs like that. I'll tell you another club who's going to be very good over the next 3 years, in my opinion. And here's a tip for you. I think Southampton will be one of those clubs.
Yeah.
I honestly think that relegation is the best thing that ever happened to them. I think with Rasmus in there from Brentford and his partners, and now Russell Martin, I just think Southampton, you watch them go, the sky's the limit. I predict they will be top two this season. I'm not sure if it's them or Leicester winning the league. Mm-hmm. I think they'll be top 12 in the Premier League in the first year back. And I think they will produce the Brighton type numbers you're seeing in sales every year and recruit very well. So if I was a Saints fan, I would be very optimistic about the next few years.
Yeah, because they were kind of the original poster child, weren't they, for this kind of model? And then, you know, whether it's just wasn't sustainable or there were some blips along the way. But
yeah, I think ownership changed and whatever. I think with the people at Southampton, that won't be a problem. I think they're younger. I think a lot of good things. So no, I expect Southampton to be very, very good over the next few years. And the other one I'd say there is West Ham. I've been under a lot of criticism. I was on Talk Sport. I'm listening to everyone moaning. Mm-hmm. Said at the time, Sullivan, unbelievable businessman. I would never worry about West Ham. They've just won a European trophy. I like their business. I like Ward-Prowse. I like Maguire when they get him. The midfielder they brought in was nearly going to go to Chelsea last summer, the foreign guy they paid $34 million for. I think they're going to sign other players. And I think, again, there was a lot of unnecessary criticism about them. But I think they did their Rice deal. They're probably going to sell that guy to Man City for $90-100 million. And the one thing I'll give them is they reinvest. And if you sell two players for gigantic figures, but it allows you to bring in three or four experienced players that make your 11 better, and two or three younger players or four players that are exciting, I think it's win-win.
What's West Ham's natural level?
I honestly think West Ham can be top six with their stadium.
Yeah,
they showed it 2 years ago. They just won a European trophy. I think David Moyes gets a lot of criticism. I think they were brilliant a couple of years ago. They had a down year last year. They had a lot of new players they were mixing in. I didn't think they were ever in danger going down. I just think that's... there's always a lot of crap about the club off the field in the press and whatever. But what it doesn't give credit to is, and I'm not a Karen Brady fan in a big way, she digs at me over the years, but she's brilliant at her job. Sullivan's a brilliant owner. His children are involved. They've got a minority owner, another shareholder who's got deep pockets. You know, a lot of stuff's coming out in the press about director of football and manager. And they've got a manager who's been around a long time, who's qualified for the Champions League with Everton, who's finally won a trophy in Europe for West Ham. You know, I just don't think they get a lot of plaudits because they've had a bad season. I saw the other day talking about firing Moyes and doing this, and I'm like, and by the way, they play in an unbelievable facility. So I think for West Ham, top six all day long. And, you know, I would imagine this year they'd be like, let's go win a domestic cup.
Yeah.
Let's finish top six. Let's go win the FA Cup. Let's go win the League Cup. You know what I mean? And again, it's like Europe Cup, top six, domestic cup. You're giving your fans what you want. So, yeah.
So talking about firing managers, I don't know if it counts as the first manager to leave of the season or the last manager to leave for the previous season when you haven't kicked a ball, but Wolves and their manager basically parting ways a few days before the start of the season, has been replaced by Gary O'Neill. Seems like a strange move to make right on the eve of a season.
Timing sucks. Appointment's good.
Yeah.
I like Gary O'Neill. You know, I actually know people close to him. So, you know, I'd heard, you know, whisper 10 to 7 days before it was happening. And that guy didn't want to be there. Now, I'd imagine Wolves, like a lot of other Chinese owners, because they have a Chinese owner. I think what's happening with a lot of Chinese owners is that the China have shut down the gates of money. Yeah. You know, we know how China's operated. We know about the Communist Party. And unfortunately, these owners have got caught up in it where you're not allowed to bring money out. It's not that they don't have money. And we've seen it at West Brom. We've seen it at other clubs, you know, Villa years ago before the current great owners came in. I like the O'Neill appointment. I think it'll take a little bit of time. If they allow him to do a bit of business, if they can afford to, at the end of the window, yeah, it's a good one. I think Gary O'Neill was very unlucky what happened last year. I understand Bournemouth had a plan. That's fair enough. You got a new owner. And Bournemouth have done fucking incredible business in the transfer market. But give Gary O'Neill time. Because what he did after Scott Parker's, you know, white flag last, you know, summer, well, the end of the summer, was unbelievable. Unfucking believable. And I don't think he got enough credit for it. You could argue probably manager of the fucking season, keeping Bournemouth in the league.
And as we are recording this, Harry Kane is on a plane or not on a plane, depending on what's going on for Bayern Munich. I mean, this seems like it's a drawn out. It doesn't really, nobody comes out of it with a lot of credit, but where do you think it's going to end?
Well, I said on TalkSport constantly, I didn't think he got to Bayern Munich, and everyone thought it was insulting Bayern Munich. And I'm like, is he going for the money? I don't think so, because Spurs could probably even say to him, we'll keep you for a year. We'll notch up your income just to keep you for the year. Him staying at Spurs is worth a lot more than 100 million. And I'll tell you why. Harry Kane with Spurs, they go in the Champions League, it's worth 50 million. Then you throw the value of the players around him. If Spurs score 100 goals and Kane plays a big part in it and X amount of assists come from him, him and him, their values go through the roof. The fans stay engaged. The commercial value. I don't think 86 million quid pays for that. So I am surprised. Who am I to tell Spurs how to operate?
Yeah.
Maybe that's an agreement they had with Kane if they hit it. I'm fucking astonished. Chelsea, you know, regardless, haven't gone in. R said to him, just wait. Just wait till, because he's Pochettino's love child. And just said to him, just play at Spurs for the season and you'll join us next summer. Mm-hmm. All of this all tribal thing that you can't play for Spurs. And I don't buy into all of that because players have a short career. I think they'd be able to go where they want. So I am absolutely fucking amazed he's going to Germany. Now, I don't know if there's a clause in there that he has a release clause that he can come for a year, but I'm astonished.
You would hope that he sees it as well, not hope, but from a contractual perspective, you can't see him playing out his days in Germany if he was to go there. You know, maybe a 1 year or a 2 year go there and have a shot at the Champions League and then come back to the Premier League, and maybe he can't take that step right now because of a contract that he may have in place that prohibits him from doing within, or that Spurs just basically won't accept an offer from an English club.
And I'm amazed that Real Madrid haven't gone and signed him. And I tell you why, everyone's on Mbappe. We know he's going to go to Madrid. But Mbappe's not a nine like Harry Kane.
Yeah.
He, you know, a lot of the time you play wide in a front three. I'm not a, you know. And I am astonished with Benzema gone and they haven't got that traditional number nine. He is like made for Real Madrid. 86 million for Real Madrid is a drop in the ocean. And it's a perfect place for him to go. That, you know, with all due respect to Bayern Munich, it's not Real Madrid.
Yeah.
You would have him and Bellingham in that Real Madrid team. They sign Mbappe next summer. If they can't fit everyone in the team, they sell him back to the Premier League. I'm absolutely astonished. And
make money on it, no doubt.
The best striker in the Premier League is going to Germany, regardless whether it's Bayern Munich. I'm just saying. But listen, it is what it is. It's the way it goes.
You think Mbappe, the stalemate there, is going to go on, or suddenly transfer deadline day, there's going to be some
Real Madrid come in transfer deadline day and offer him 40, 50 million. 100%. I'd be amazed if he's still there and he's not in Madrid. Madrid's firepower is fucking, you look at the strikers and what they've signed and some of the veterans, you know, if Madrid want to be a force this season, and Barcelona well over the last year, and they want to be a force in the Champions League, they need Mbappe and probably more. Otherwise, Real Madrid ain't winning the Champions League, and I don't think they're winning La Liga.
No, and I can't see PSG just sitting him, you know, on the bench for the whole, not even on the bench for the whole season.
They know it's coming. And I'll give you an example. I know there are clubs are going to bid for Clark Harrison deadline day. I already have an insight into two clubs who want him, who are going to bid me 500 grand and 600 grand in deadline day, and they can kiss my fucking ass. So I know it's coming. You know, it's like, okay, take this.
You're desperate now, just taking for whatever.
Yeah, correct. I know how the whole game plays. You have to preempt that. You know what I mean? So whatever else. So I know that kind of nonsense is going to happen to us, you know, for a player in the prime of their career, two golden boots. I just know. So, you know, that's just the game. That's the way it works.
And so the last thing, and then we can go to some questions. So is Birmingham City now your third team now that Tom Brady has come on board?
Thomas Jefferson Edward Brady II. They're goats. I'm not going to lie. You know, I have a weakness for Birmingham anyway because Barry's a fucking being manager and, you know, whatever. I had a great chat with Craig Gardner. Yeah, their ex-player is now their technical director, you know, when they played this preseason. They got good new owners. They're doing a lot of good things there. They're cleaning the stadium up. I'm happy for the Birmingham fans. And I love the fact Brady's involved. Another American lands on the shore. So, yeah, interesting. Mm-hmm. No, I think there's a lot of Americans interested in definitely Prem and Championship level, you know, and, you know, there's a real influx of equity. You know, people who've invested, you know, their pensions, their money with hedge funds and whatever. You see it through the Burnley show. There's like probably 10, 12 different people in each meeting company goes into. They're on Zoom calls. These people have put their money in, you know, hoping to get a return. You know, I'm not saying Birmingham's the same, by the way, because I don't know the whole Brady, you know, idea of it. But listen, it's entertainment. And you know what? I'll take a bit of Brady coverage over the, you know, the coverage from League Two on some of the clubs that can be OTT at times.
Well, you know, having said that, we drew Wrexham in the League Cup. So
you'll be on TV.
Well, this will be the one that they're not on TV, probably, because they were in the first round. But, you know, we come to the circus tent that is the race course. And, you know, probably get packed. You know, our bags get packed and we're out of the cup.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Sky, you know, their brains break and they're jizzing their pants over them. But I feel sorry for the Wrexham fans because they got a great fan base.
Yeah.
Their owners are fine, by the way. I watch all the shows. I quite enjoy the shows. They look like nice guys. But there's so much hatred's gone towards them, you know, because of, you know, ESPN have got them on every week. Mm-hmm. BBC, everyone's writing articles about a League Two football club and not other League Two football clubs. So I understand the pent-up irritation by other clubs, other fans, other whatever else. But at the end of the day, you know, Wrexham aren't breaking any rules. They're not breaking any laws, you know. they're building a football club that's, like I've always said about clubs on the up.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get it. People were irritated with Salford a few years ago. Now, I guess the biggest brain freeze at Sky is, do we put Salford or Wrexham on? So I get it, you know. What's the next question?
So let's go to some questions. Paul C says, would love to hear the pros and cons of progressing in the cups where the prize money is so limited. You talked about limited prize money in the League Cup. And does that mindset change throughout the competition?
Yeah, we don't do well in the League Cup. So I was amazed we won the other night. Usually we were dumped out of that cup. If we get on TV, I think it's worth 60, 70 grand. If you get to the last 16 quarters and get United, Liverpool away, Chelsea away, it could be a half a mil to £1 million payday. So that's when you get excited. Right now, I'm not really giving a thought. The EFL Trophy, yeah, we've won it before. We'd like to win the EFL Trophy, you know, which was the, I forget what it was called before when we won it. But we'll play a lot of younger players in that, you know. The FA Cup, you definitely want to hit round three or four because it adds 200-300 grand to your already expensive budget, you know, and your cash flow deficits or whatever else. But if the manager said to me the game on Saturday is more important than that, I would back him on that. So I'll take my lead from the manager. I haven't put any pressure on him. I've said to him, mate, if you can go and make us £1 million out of the FA Cup, fucking love it. It'll help with some of the bills and I'll throw a few quid your way for an extra player, but it's not the end of the world.
Do you put anything in the budget for cup runs?
No, I used to. And Dawn, my CFO, one of the best in the business, has impinged on me to take it out. Because then I won't scream and shout like I would in the past where she'd be like, we need more money. I'm like, yeah, but it was our budget. And she goes, yeah, but we got knocked out of the first round of the League Cup or the first round of the whatever. So, no, things like that, playoff runs, they're not in your budget. You know, they're in a column that are called assumables, something like that, assumptions. And you know, you know, that player gets sold or that player is an add-on. Another club gets promoted and you have a sell-on for that player. All those little things are in there as, you know, things that could happen, but they're not in your budget.
Yeah. Question from Sam Richards. Sam's a Reading fan. He said he's a Reading season ticket holder who was at the game on Saturday. Was really impressed with Posh. Weathered a dodgy 20 minutes, but really grew into the game. Lots of pace in the side will cause teams problems this year. He asks, what does Darren make of the situation at Reading? Fans completely fed up with the owner, unpaid tax bills, wages not always fully paid, and endless embargoes. Five to 800 fans staged a sit-in protest against the owner after the game on Saturday. Can any type of protest really have a desired effect?
I spent a lot of time with John Majeski at the game. I loved him. He owned Reading. He's a class act. And looking around his love child, the stadium, which is his heritage, that's his legacy. Fucking love that stadium. You know, I dare say the training ground is fucking out of this world. I can't speak about the current owners. I don't know them. I don't like making comments on owners, first of all, because I don't think it's my place to. I don't know enough about them. I heard about the protest. I obviously left it full time. I don't want to get caught up in traffic. Do protests work? I personally don't think they do. I don't think they have any effect, particularly on foreign owners who aren't there. It's different if an owner lives in a town and someone's in their front garden every fucking day with a placard or whatever, or having got kids at school, which you never want to see. I do know this, that whether the current owner stays or sells, Reading, again, is one of them clubs. Great stadium, great training ground, great fan base. Even the signings they've made. They've signed players on £5,000-6,000 a week in League One that wouldn't be like any other club and were hanging on for Reading. When you sign players that ilk, you're going to be okay and you're going to do well. And even the 11 that started on Saturday, I felt we deserved to win the game, but they're a good team. And I dare say a lot of teams are going to get beaten very comfortably at Reading when they go there. So, you know, as much as it feels bad, and as Sam, I think, was the fan who asked the question, it's not all bad. And, you know, take inspiration from other clubs who've been in those situations who are bouncing back. One of them, Derby, for example. So it's not always the end of the world.
All right, I'm going to ask one more. We have a couple others. I'm going to save those over for next week. But a question from Milan or Milan. He says, hi, Dara. What are your thoughts on the transfer window being open for a whole month at the start of the season? Would you rather it be shut at the end of July so you can focus on the games, or does it benefit teams so they can see what they're lacking and they at least have a little bit of time covering what they need to sign?
I love the window. And it would hurt clubs like ours if the window's closed in August. You know, you look at all the money, the billions been spent. And again, a lot of it's gone overseas. Now you're seeing some trickle effect. You're seeing a lot of money going to Southampton. You're seeing money going to Bristol from Alex Scott getting sold. So hopefully you'll see the trickle down when they start spending, hopefully domestically. But you're also seeing some clubs like bringing a lot of foreign players, even in the lower leagues, even, you know, and that's kind of like, oh, Jesus, here we go. You know, I always like to see money sprinkled throughout the league. I would hate for the window to be closed in August. I think it would hurt us, all clubs in the EFL. We need the full 3 months. I would want to bring back the policy in the past of you had till October to do loan to buy deals.
Yeah.
Where you could bring in loans for like a 5 week period and chung on an option to buy in January. We signed Craig McHale Smith under those circumstances 17 years ago. We signed Dwight Gale when we were in the championship on one of those, you know, where we had an option to buy for 500 grand, you know, and we put down 50. So I wouldn't mind that being in place for some of the clubs in the lower leagues. You know, at the end of the day, you have things like injuries, you have things like, you know, your plans can change, you know, things can happen. And sometimes clubs need to do a little bit more. I don't like clubs signing 10 players in the final week of a window.
Yeah. That's kind of desperation, isn't it?
Yeah. But I think it needs to be there as a tool because you've got other clubs who need to use levers to do deals to clear the decks before they can sign. I'll give you an example. Barnsley last year sold some very good players early in the window and they signed a lot of very good players, I want to say, through the end of July and through August. And it led to them being a force. It led to them being one of the best teams in League One. If you'd taken that away from Barnsley, you would have taken a lot of hope away from their fans. And a good club would have had issues. So yeah. There is your example of it needs to be in place because sometimes deals take time to do.
Should there be an injury exception? So I'm thinking, you know, you can get an emergency loan keeper, for example, if you go down with keepers. Should there be some kind of rules that allow that for outfield players as well?
Yes. I think if you lose a key outfield player for longer than 6 months, and it has to be because otherwise people will take the piss. Yeah. So a serious injury or whatever else, longer than 6 months, you should be given dispensation to bring in just one player per team. Can only happen once, three or four, doesn't matter. You can do one. I think there needs to be dispensation when that happens. And by the way, there also the rule in there would be that player you lost for 6 months has to have played in over 50% of your games so far.
Yeah.
So you don't have an academy player.
Some kid, yeah.
You know, so if you put in those little levers and conditions, I think it makes perfect sense to do that. Some teams only have two strikers, you know, whatever else, you know, and you know, you lose a player, you know, of a certain ilk, you know, there should be a way of, okay, you know, give us a chance. We couldn't, you want financial fair play. We couldn't afford to go and get three and four strikers and stack them up. So you want us to be sustainable and sensible. Give us a lever where we go to the bare minimum and keep a squad of 24. But if we lose a key player, give us a lever in place to bring in that person outside of the window. Otherwise, you'll have clubs keep spending and having too many players in the squad.
And yeah, because you have all these players that are not going to play because you just and then you're spreading the money over more players rather than being able to focus the money on one or two that you really want.
Yeah, you're stacking them up. So I do. I think you should have your emergency goalkeeper and emergency outfield player. Mm. And I think, you know, that would be something sensible and positive for the EFL to do.
Now, I've got one last question about loans before we go. So we had a loanee last year, a kid called Scott Banks from Crystal Palace, and he did well, made an impact, got our young player of the year. You know, there was talk of him going to the Championship or League One this season. He ended up taking a loan move to the second division in Germany. And so I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on players who take loan, especially younger players, taking loan moves outside of the UK.
I commend them. I commend their family. I think it's very tough. I understand why they do it. Germany has that allure that a lot of young British players end up doing well in Germany and getting big moves. So I get that. I'd like to see more of them in England. You know my feelings on, I wanted to do a draft on youngsters and loans. Yeah. We could go through that in another episode because I just think it's good for EFL's Premier League teams to have that happen. And it's good for us in the EFL to have it happen. So, but again, you know, so many things are unaffordable when you're doing business with the Premier League. So, yeah, let's talk about that in a bigger way next time. So make sure the title of this episode is Young Guns Ignite.
All right. I'm going to write that down, given the fact that I'm the standing producer this week. we're going to do everything we can to get this out today, Friday, so it'll be hot off the press. I want to thank everybody. We got a lot of questions that came in this week, so do keep those coming. You can tag us or send them DM on any of our social medias or email them to contact@hardtruthfootball.com.
Brilliant.
So until next week, which is probably only a few days away now, given that it's Friday already, good luck tomorrow.
Good luck to you guys tomorrow as well. Remember all the fans out there traveling. It's early days, but enjoy your football.
All right. Well, we'll see you all again soon. Take care, everyone.